Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America, where we're getting a little bit of a reprieve from that hot, humid weather that we were having. Hope you guys are enjoying your summer and your week, for that matter. For those of you who are new around here, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a We recovery program because it is in the We that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. And for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. Again, I'm your host, Kim Justice. Now, the first time my guest tonight was here was 2015. In fact, it was July of 2015. I looked it up today. And things were, all I can say is that for every year, another book has come out and a lot more research and involvement since that first interview back in 2015. And I was doing some reviewing today, and it's just incredible the way the message and the work has evolved. Many of you know that I've had a lot of veterans on as guests, groups with veterans helping veterans, and not a lot of them have we heard that have had good luck with the VA. In and of itself, we all know the suicide rates, not only in the military community, but actually all over the brain injury community. And as things get more stressful in the world, I guess at large. But in any case, my guest tonight, Dr. Mark Gordon, has been a strong advocate of integrative and functional medicine and the promotion of wellness medicine, thought the correction of underlying hormonal deficiencies. He was instrumental in promoting the recognition of traumatic brain injury as a cause of hormonal deficiency in the Hallmark presentation on ESPN's Outside the Lines in 2007. His book, The Clinical Application of Interventional Medicine, is recognized by his peers as a primer for the standards of care and assessment for interventional endocrinology. Okay, big words. anti-aging medicine. He has served as medical director of CBS Studios and has also participated on projects with HBO, ESPN, CNN, Fox, Good Morning America, and a number of international news programs. In 2014, Dr. Gordon appeared on the Joe Rogan Experience, and you can find that on YouTube, a couple of them as a matter of fact, where the discussion on traumatic brain injury and hormonal dysfunction generated national and international interest. One episode included Jason Hall, the screenwriter for American Sniper, an ex-petty officer and Navy SEAL Corpsman Matthew Gosney, who spoke at length about his blast trauma, gunshot wounds, surgery, depression, and 16 different medications that did nothing to prevent his attempted suicide. He shares his experience of being evaluated by Dr. Gordon and starting a hormonal replenishment protocol that led to his stopping 14 medications within 6 weeks and the resolution of his deep depression. His book, Traumatic Brain Injury, A Clinical Approach to Diagnosis and Treatment, was launched along with a workshop attended by an international array of medical specialists seeking advanced training in diagnosis and treatment of TBI. Dr. Gordon continues to work with veterans and active military groups, providing funding for those with injuries received while in the theater of war. Dr. Gordon is owner and medical director of Millennium TBI in Encino, California. For more information, see tbimedlegal.com. I'll be repeating that a couple of times during the show, but it's also in the program notes. So any one of the 40 places around social media, you might have clicked on the link. The bottom line in the program notes is the website. Again, tbimedlegal.com. And with that, I will bring on Dr. Gordon. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fantastic, Kim. And that is too long of an introduction. But thank you very much.
I've got an even longer one here.
Let's make it succinct, shorter. Anyway, I didn't know it was way back in 2015 when I just released the TBI book and started having training sessions for physicians who were interested in learning about the real science that's behind traumatic brain injury. So thanks for reminding me.
Well, and one of the reasons why at the time, and I've pursued that course, is that, you know, I've been around a little longer too now, and I've heard a lot more of the same when you talk about the amounts of medications, you know, and whether it's the military or civilians, the, you know, there are some common threads woven in there. When I was reading and doing some reviewing today, you know, one of them is that the first line of defense does seem to be what I've taken to calling pill pelting. You know, we come in and the doctors, God bless them, have saved our lives. But as far as the residuals that we carry down the road, they seem to be at a loss. And what happens so often is that the pill pelting goes on, and when we don't respond to the medication, then it automatically, we get punted over to the psychiatrist's couch, and it becomes a mental problem. And two things on that. First of all, I've always appreciated alternative therapies, integrative medicine, the kind of things that we're going to be talking excuse me, about tonight, because, you know, it's a scary thing. It used to be, you know, you would see drug ads, and I'm not at all saying that people don't need medication sometimes, but, you know, you can't watch an hour program without seeing three pharmaceutical ads, and the other two ads have to do with lawsuits from bad side effects of these medications. But in any case, you know, I mean, it's crazy. You get three pharma commercials and two attorney commercials in almost any hour program that you watch. And, you know, the side effects are getting more and more scary and intense. It used to be, you know, you might feel a little groggy, you know, you might get a nosebleed. There was some fairly, you know, didn't sound good, but they were fairly benign compared to tuberculosis, leukemia, you know, some of these side effects that we're hearing now. You know, it's like, geez, would I rather deal with my aching joints or take a medication to help that and maybe come up with tuberculosis, leukemia,
yeah,
and being a little drowsy and not focused. And so, you know, then when you get punted over to the psychiatrist's couch, you know, that's well and good. We've all got some emotional baggage, and that's a good place to dump it. They signed up to get paid for that. And hopefully we don't have to bring some of that home when we can go and dump it. But that really isn't the underlying cause for those of us with brain injury. And we know that, but trying to convince a doctor of that and to follow a different protocol is like next to impossible for us, and why I appreciate you so much. In fact, I already got the links from 2015, 2017, and tonight, and I'm going to be circulating those to my doctor's clinics when this interview is concluded, because there's so much good information. And unfortunately for doctors, and I am going to let you talk in a minute. You can have the mic and talk the rest of the time if you like. But the fact that you're training these folks, you know, one of the big challenges now is I'm sure you know too, and I won't get political, but except to the extent to say, except to say, that with managed care, as a patient, it feels like cattle getting shoved through the chute. Doctors are having to see so many more patients, and we're afforded so little time, that one of the things I tell everybody who's listening is write down your concerns before you get into the office, so that you have them written down in front of you, because we tend to have problems with our memory. And when we feel pressured because we know the doctor's pressured and in a hurry, then we forget even more, and we don't address some of the things we came in to address. So it's good to bullet point items. You want to, you know, be prepared for your doctor's appointment these days, but that gives them even less time to do the research that you can afford them. And so for that, I am grateful that you've continued to evolve for many years now. And a lot of the answers for us have come out of work with the veterans like you're doing. So in any case, why don't we back up and just kind of do a little review for those that are new, or we all have memory, in what got you interested in? You've got a vast background. First of all, I do want to, and then I promise I'll shut up, I do want to congratulate you, though, because just last fall you were presented a very prestigious award, the Alan Mintz MD award at the AMMG convention. And that was for excellence, clinical excellence in age management medicine, which was really recognizing your long and distinguished career. And why don't you tell us a little bit about that, where you started, how your career as a doctor has kind of evolved, and then what got you to recognize a hormonal deficiency and connect it with traumatic brain injury, because nobody has ever tested or mentioned that to 98% of the people listening tonight.
Right. Well, you know, my own anthology or history goes back in the 90s when, after having had six head traumas in the late 90s, I started developing depression, obesity, wasn't a happy camper, and went and did a full spectrum of hormones, an area that I had just started getting involved in endocrinology, which is the anti-aging movement, which I didn't really like the term anti-aging, so I coined the term interventional endocrinology, and then my first book is all about, you know, the science that supports the rationale for utilizing, for measuring hormones and replenishing it. Back in 97, jumping ahead to now in 2019, there's an overwhelming amount of supportive information that has already been out there since 1986 that unfortunately the major communities of medicine are just not reading, again, because docs don't have the time to do it, or they're being directed by, you know, organized medical systems like your Kaisers and your VAs and so forth to do a standard type of knee-jerk medical workup. And that's where intervention and nuances in treating are being ignored. So back in 97, I had my hormones tested. I was found to be growth hormone, testosterone, and thyroid deficient. And within 3 months of having replenishment back to levels that were ideal, not the low end, not the low limits, just in the normal limits, but right dab in the middle. And that's one of the major distinctions in how we do so well, how our patients do so well, is because hypothetically, let's say a hormone's between 10 and 90. If you come in at 11 or 12, your traditional physician's going to say, oh, you're within the goalpost, you're normal. Regardless of their having any kind of symptomatology that can be correlated with a relative deficiency, meaning that their symptoms are equivalent to someone who's at a 5 or 6. But we don't look at it that way. We'd rather treat numbers than treat the people. And if you don't fit in that paradigm, what happens is they say you're crazy. Oh, you've got normal testosterone level, or your normal growth hormone, or normal whatever, and it's 2 points above the lowest of the low, and you're normal. Oh, those symptoms you're having, it's because you're depressed, because you're schizophrenic, bipolar, or whatever. So they use as a response to, you know, low levels, not the fact that, whoa, you've got low levels, but the fact that you're crazy. That's the reason. So what happened was, within 3 months of getting on treatment on my protocol, and it was, in fact, Dr. Mintz, you know, in 97, 98, that his organization was evaluating and treating me. And it was, you know, interesting that many years later I ended up getting his award for what I do. And between 97 and 2004, I was just living a much higher quality of life. Depression was gone. Anxiety was gone. I was doing martial arts, got a second degree black belt at 53 years of age. Was doing, you know, television stuff, working as medical director for CBS, just a whole bunch of great stuff that I did not have the energy and the mental capacity to deal with it prior to getting my hormones corrected. And then I was preparing a lecture for an organization on the brain and hormones. And one of the articles that I reviewed was from Turkey, and it was my epiphany article. It was about pugilists, boxers in Turkey who they were being found to have deficiencies of growth hormone and mood disturbance and so forth. And that was my aha. I said, okay, if they can have trauma from repetitive injury, like a boxer or boxing, that causes hormone deficiency and develop mood disorders, I said, wow. So I went back to my population that I've been treating for this interventional endocrinology or anti-aging medicine and started asking the patients from all age groups whether or not they've ever had any head injury. Almost 100% of them said, yeah, motorcycle accident, car accident, slip and fall, dropped as a baby, whatever the situation was. And there was the pre-morbid is what we call it. There was the pre-existing causative factor for developing what eventually becomes called TBI, post-concussion syndrome, or PTS. And initially when you and I spoke, my focus was on hormones. It's no longer on hormones. The focus is on what the trauma really does. And what the trauma really does is it initiates an inflammatory process in the brain. And just a few years ago, they started associating brain inflammation that they call neuroinflammation with a whole bunch of medical conditions like schizophrenia, depression, anxiety, bipolar, obsessive-compulsive, PTS, post-concussion syndrome, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, ALS, and Alzheimer's disease. These are all inflammatory diseases. And then of recent, you know, CTE, chronic encephalopathy from trauma. And they're all associated through inflammation. And so what we've been doing over the past 3 years has been changing from a hormonal-based system to an anti-inflammatory-based system. And here's where the alternative and complementary products come into play. Well, if you look at the entire spectrum, not the entire, but you look at a large block of products that are available from curcumin, turmeric, vitamin E, gamma tocopherol, vitamin E, gamma form, fish oil, omega-3, and there was a phenomenal book written by Michael D. Lewis, Colonel Michael D. Lewis, called When Brains Collide. It's his thesis on the beneficial effects of high-dose fish oil in acute brain trauma. People that were in comas being put on nasal, you know, through a feeding tube, being put on fish oil and getting better, waking up sooner with a clarity, because the fish oil has in it very unique properties for protecting the brain, protectin, resolvin, and dropping this inflammatory cascade in the brain that's precipitated by something called NF-kappa-B, nuclear factor kappa-B, which is the genomic trigger for inflammation. So if you have a slip and fall, hit your head, blast trauma, overpressure, repetitive gunfire, whatever, chemotherapy, x-rays, repetitive x-rays, too much x-rays, what happens is unique cells in the brain called microglia, they start dumping these inflammatory chemicals called cytokines into the brain. And they found that these cytokines, if you have an injury 17 years ago, you'll still have these inflammatory chemicals going if you've gone into what they call a chronic phase. Some people go into what's called an acute phase. They get their trauma. They have a short period of time where might have mood disturbance, lethargy, or daytime fatigue, and then they get better. And this is because of something I've been referring to as biological resiliency, meaning that if you're eating well, you're exercising, you've got good genetics, you have good quercetin and polyphenols and vitamin D and vitamin E and all these pregnenolone and testosterone, all healthy levels, they're protective of inflammation in the body. So what happens is if you have a high biological resiliency, you've got a lot of protection, body armor, Kevlar, you got a lot of protection. So if you have exposure to some kind of a trauma, hit on the head, slip and fall, car accident, you only lose a small fraction of that protection, but you still protect it. In people who drink alcohol or have drugs or poor nutrition, poor hygiene, nutritional hygiene, they don't build up the protective outer Kevlar to protect them that when they do have a trauma. One of the conversations I have within the military that I work with is about the almost 100% of the guys that I see, active and veterans, all of them had, prior to entrance into the military, had a sport that took away some of their protection. Football, MMA, jiu-jitsu, wrestling, grappling, field hockey, water polo, and they all had history of head trauma with or without loss of consciousness. And that's the pre-morbid occurrence before they went into the military, because we have guys that were in front of the same IED or in front of the same blast trauma. Each one of them responded differently to the same exposure. So the question is, how is that possible? It means that each one of them has a difference in their protection, their biological resilience, whether or not it's nutritional, physical fitness, or genetics that protects them.
Mm-hmm.
So when I started on gave this presentation on the pathophysiology, neuropathophysiology, the brain and illness due to hormone deficiency, every single one of the hormones has an associated clinical presentation, whether or not it's depression, ALS, MS, or what have you. They are all associated. I did a lecture for the International Society of Neurofeedback and Research back a couple of years ago. It's all on my website, that one you've been telling them, the tbimedlegal.com. And they can actually see a 45-minute presentation where it goes through every hormone and its relationship to research on illnesses. Testosterone, 83,000 articles associating testosterone deficiency with depression, 103,000 articles with estradiol and depression, 410,000 articles thyroid and depression. And it goes on and on and on. Over a million articles that have been published talking about the different major hormones in our body. There are 2.78 million articles on vitamin D and the heart. There's 1.5 million on the brain, neuroinflammation and vitamin D. They found vitamin D is extremely important for stabilizing our immune system. So we see people with lupus and rheumatoid arthritis and Hashimoto's thyroiditis, autoimmune of the thyroid, where they have low levels of vitamin D. And there are articles been published about that. What I do is called translational medicine, or using translational science. And what that is all the science that's already been done, but it's sitting on some shelf collecting dust. I read those articles, and when I find 50, 60, 70 articles that say the same thing, then I start applying it in a clinical setting. And that's what translational medicine is about, taking the bench science and applying it in a clinical setting. So we use 80 to 90% of our treatment protocols are 100% normal, natural products. And I have a pharmacist license also. We just came out with a non-pharmaceutical product called Brain Care 2, and we started a test project through one of the military bases in another state, and we're having 60% average improvement within 3 months on two natural products, well, two compositions of natural products. There's a total of 11 different components in it, six on each, and then they share a similar product called EGCG, which is an extract from green tea that's been researched and shown to be beneficial in people with strokes, Alzheimer's, and dementia diseases. So there's a whole bunch of natural products out there that are safe and effective, but you can't make money on it. So they're not being promoted as, you know, key products. It was one of our key products that we use is called pregnenolone. It's also referred to as the mother of all hormones. It's the number one hormone produced by metabolism of cholesterol. And this pregnenolone has been unbelievable in helping with depression and anxiety. And there are 7,190 articles talking about pregnenolone, progesterone, and this thing called allopregnenolone. Well, in March of this year, a product came out which costs $34,000 a year, and it's the metabolite of pregnenolone that they're calling brexangolone, which is really something they call allopregnanolone. And it's this allopregnanolone that's neuroprotective, neuroregenerative, free radical scavenging, helps with communication between neurons through what we call synapses, the handshake kind of deal that neurons do to pass information along a chain of informational highway. And a natural product called pregnenolone came out for $34,000 a year. Pregnenolone's about $100 a year, high dose, about $100 a year. And it's been an absolute lifesaver in our patient population. Right now, we're carrying about 2,800 patients. Of that, about 317 are veteran and active military. We're beginning, since the beginning of this year, a lot of active military coming to us because U.S. government spends a lot of money, $1 million+ for each of these SOF, these special ops forces, and they're losing their position. Like my partner Andrew Marr, happy birthday tomorrow, Andrew.
Yeah.
Marr, Green Beret. It's his birthday mañana. Andrew Marr was EOD, Explosive Ordnance and Demolition, for Green Beret, and he had one blast trauma that put him out of commission, that put him on to 13 medications. He was a full-blown alcoholic and was not a happy camper. And through his book that he wrote called Tales from the Blast, Blast Factory, talks about how he took hold of his situation and took a bad thing and made it good, and that's how he and I met. He was looking for, you know, someone outside the box, and at that same day, I was looking for a 501(c) charitable organization that was owned and operated by military, by veterans, and that's how he and I met. And we've been working together since 2014, and we've processed a lot of people from Delta, from SEAL team, from Airborne, from Rangers, all the special forces through our program. And his book was picked up last year by a two-time Emmy Award-winning producer by the name of Jerry Scheer, who took his book, took large population or group of our patients, and made a documentary, a full-length documentary, which was screened 2 months ago, and it's in the process of being a distribution. Being arranged so that it'll be in the theaters, just like movies like Thank You for Your Service and American Sniper by Jason Hall, or Kyle was who wrote the book. Jason Hall wrote the screenplay. So this movie coming out has some of our military in it, where one of our guys, Kevin, on protocol, on his treatment protocol, after we run through a special group of laboratory tests that you can get in any laboratory, but it's how you interpret them that makes the difference. Based on how you interpret it, we put Kevin on a treatment protocol, and he finishes MIT and Harvard business. He does a double master's, and he graduates. And now he's a great advocate for helping, you know, he's got his day job, and then he goes around promoting Kevin Fleick, promoting, you know, support for his brothers and sisters in arms. And just unbelievable what's happening with our patients or our clients who go through our treatment protocol and come out the other side doing much better or doing off their medication. I just posted two new data sheets. We're in 165 of our veterans. They were in 12 months, starting at zero, in 12 months they were 76.2% better than when they started, and they were off 90% of their medication. In the civilian population of 412, they were 74.6% better in that 12-month period and off of the majority of their medication. And pain medication, we had one Special Forces guy who is on methadone, wakes up one morning, stops his methadone without any withdrawals. We have guys on Oxycontin, smoking, drinking, because alcohol is used to cut down on the inflammation, but it also increases inflammation. Narcotics make us feel that pain isn't there, but at the same time it induces inflammation. That's why we get breakthrough treatment on narcotics, is because they fake you into thinking you don't have pain. At the same time, they increase the pain threshold, or they increase the level of pain. So we have I didn't understand any of this until 2-3 years ago when I started looking at the literature to try and understand why this was happening. I didn't know why. Now I understand, and it's very, very clear in the molecular chemistry of cellular function how these things happen. So in the past 3-4 years, the amount of articles coming out on inflammation as the root cause for the chemical changes in the brain that allow you to become depressed. Go up to a depressed person and ask them straightforward, you want to be depressed? They're going to tell you no, hell no. Well, the reason why they're depressed is because the regulatory chemistry that keeps them level and not depressed or without anxiousness or without, you know, bipolar obsessive compulsive tendencies is a chemical process. And the medications we're giving you, well, things like ketamine, some people out there might know ketamine. Ketamine works through, you know, controlling calcium, which is what we can do by just stopping inflammation. The SSRIs help by slowing down the dumping of inflammatory chemicals by these cells called microglia in the brain. So we've now been able to walk backwards and see exactly how these drugs, SSRIs or psychotropic or, you know, marijuana, there's a big one. I was not very into CBD or Delta 9 or anything until I went back to the recent literature 3-5 years ago, and it's amazing that the CBD uses, which is the non-euphoric component of what's in marijuana, and it's calming, and how it works is by blocking the precipitation of inflammation. It actually helps to lower inflammation. Guys who have migraines, we have guys that daily migraines, 8 months into their program, no migraines, no medication. Sleep problems, inflammation of the brain leads to insomnia, regular headaches, migraine headaches, seizure disorder, all associated with it, and it's all in the literature. You just need to go and look. And there's an overwhelming amount of information. I go through 15 articles a week, and I register one of them with our journal club, things that are extremely important. We've reversed 34 cases of diabetes, type 2 diabetes. In the process of reading through some of these articles, I read about areas of importance like diabetes, and there's inflammation, there's chromium, there's DHEA, there's testosterone, all help to drop the biochemistry that leads to elevation in blood sugar. So that's what I've been doing since we last talked.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Where do I begin? First thing I want to tell folks listening, just kind of charting back a little bit, is Quiet Explosions, the documentary that Mark was just talking about. You can see a trailer of that on YouTube, and you just put in Quiet Explosions. Well, you can probably put in Dr. Mark Gordon or put in Andrew.
Kim, sorry for the interruption. The fastest way is just put in QuietExplosionsPlural.com, and you get right to the website. And you can click and watch the introduction with Joe Rogan and then a little bit of what was going on. It's about 2.5 minutes. So that's the fastest
way
to get it. Yes.
Thank you.
And you can also
Thank
do it
you.
The way you were just describing. But that's the shortest way. And also on my website, I have...
That's where I got it. Yeah.
Recent information.
Where.
Yeah.
Right. Again, and that's... the website, again, is TBIMedLegal.com. And that was where I happened to find the link. But yeah,
mm-hmm.
QuietExplosions.com
right.
as well. It's a great trailer for that documentary, and we'll probably be having Andrew and at least Andrew and possibly Adam on a little closer to release to talk about that. But going back for a minute, the fish oil. Now I don't omegas. I don't remember.
Right.
If it was you or Dr. Lewis, but one of the things I heard, and then feel free to correct me as we go, but somebody recommended to me that Nordic Natural omega-3s
yes.
were good ones, and mentioned that if you ever, you know, are like in your Walgreens or CVS or the store or whatever, and you just buy fish oil, chances are it's not going to have enough potency. But the other big warning is, you know, a lot of people, when I mention that to them, they say, oh, that you know, that aftertaste. I can't stand that belching fish.
Right.
If you ever experience that, the taste of a fishy taste or belching it, throw it away. It's no doubt rancid or just not pure omegas.
Right.
And do you find that Nordic Natural, and we don't work for or get anything for plugging Nordic Naturals.
No,
I'm sure there's others.
Yeah, it's called,
no, neither
it's
one
called
of us
oxidation.
Do.
Yeah, it's called oxidation. So what happens is I put all my fish oils into the freezer so it doesn't oxidize. So, you know, I'll pop two of the fish oil capsules in the morning, and they're cold. They go down well with, you know, with the light breakfast, but it protects it from oxidizing. Dr. Lewis based a lot of his work with the Nordic Natural products. He feels that they're the best, and in his book, When Brains Collide, he does speak a lot about that. And in the book, he gives a lot of science and a lot of straightforward facts on, okay, you've got a head trauma, here's what you need to do. So there's, you know, direct support for how to utilize the fish oil, whatever type you get. But it's a proportion. There are two components to it, EPA and DHA, and you have to make sure it's the right proportion to get the benefits for the brain. What I did in this new product, Brain Care 2, is that I only put in the DHA because the DHA has the highest suppression of the NF-kappa-B, the genomic trigger transducer for the production of inflammatory cytokines. And it also stimulates two protective products, Protectin and Survivin 1. And these are chemicals that are stimulated in the brain to be produced to protect neurons. So that's really what all the stuff that we're working on is, to enhance, encourage the body to ratchet up the ability to protect and heal the brain tissue so that it can become more functional. And we see this in a very short period of time. You know, 3 months to have 60% improvement in this project we have in one of the bases, it was really exciting for me to see it. The Brain Care 2 took about 15 years to put it together, and that was because there are six components in it, and each of the components went through clinical assessment in my office where we were giving it to the patients, like N-acetylcysteine, like vitamin E, like quercetin. They're all natural, and they all have significant benefits on reduction of inflammation. And once you reduce the inflammation, then the brain can start having a natural, normal chemical environment to generate testosterone, T3, pregnenolone, allopregnenolone, progesterone in the brain to help the brain to function. And we know that. There are thousands of articles on progesterone. There are studies that came out of Atlanta, Georgia, on just progesterone, the PROTECT studies, 1, 2, and 3. Two of them were positive, one of them was negative, and the one that was negative was because they did not use the same amount of progesterone as was used in the initial research. So they, of course, got less than optimal responses because they did not apples to apples in terms of use. So they found that women who had head trauma that were already on progesterone recovered faster. They did better than the women who were deficient in progesterone, because progesterone is the precursor to allopregnanolone, that $34,000 a year medication that they're calling brexanolone. So there's a lot of natural products. I mean, as I said, 80 to 90% of what I'm doing now is now natural products. And in select cases, they need to have, you know, some kind of pharmacology or pharmacological product, whether or not it's thyroid or testosterone or estrogen, progesterone, added to their protocol. But it's, you know, it's been interesting. I turned from 3-5.
You blanked out on me. Oops. Dr. Gordon just dropped. I'm sure he'll be calling in just a moment. He lives up in the mountains of California, and he warned me before he came on the show tonight that they have spotty reception where he's at. So hopefully he will be calling right back in. But if you do go to that website, again, it's TBIMedLegal.com, and you look on the left side. I'll give him the opportunity to call back in, but yeah, exactly, the other side of the mountain. We'll have to ask him if he was affected by the earthquake. But in any case, some of these supplements he's talking about, and when he calls back in, we will have him talk about how you know what you need. But you'll notice on his website that it, on the left side, there's a whole list of things. And when you go down a little past halfway, there's patients only supplement reorder is what it said. And here, let me, whoops. And you can take a look there at the list. There he is.
Hello?
Anyway, you can take a look. Yep, I got you back. I explained about
okay.
The other side of the mountain and the sometimes tentative reception, but our provider does that too. So I don't know if it's your mountain or our provider, but I was just talking about on your website on the left and talking about some of these supplements that we were talking about. A little more than halfway down, I was pointing out to people if they wanted to look at some of these supplements. It says patients only supplement reorder, and it gives some of those supplements that you were talking about earlier. Can you tell us how a person can become a patient, or how a person would know where they are deficit, which of these supplements they would need?
Well, what happens is what we do for each of our patients is we run them through a neurosteroid and neuroactive steroid assessment. Neurosteroids are the hormones produced in the brain, and the neuroactive are the ones that are produced below the neck. So what we do first is we get the results of this test, and then we put together a protocol. And that protocol is, you know, we look at vitamin D, we look at DHEA, we look at these natural products, and pregnenolone and so forth, and put together a treatment protocol. So what happens is patients would go to the USA patient enrollment program or request, and they request to come into the program since there's a lot of patients. We have to stack them so that we have adequate amount of time for each person, and so we don't take in a lot of people all at once. And I have my daughter, I have three daughters, two are docs. My middle daughter, Allison, is working with me and doing phenomenally well. She's carrying about 150 patients so far this year. And so I've only been doing the military. My daughter does civilian population. And we have clinics, independent clinics throughout the United States. They're on the navigation to TBI network physicians. And these are physicians who have gone through a rigor of training and testing to be certified on our project. So getting to your specifics, because we have limited supplies, that's why we have supplement reorder for our patients only. And we do have a new project, which is the Brain Care 2 and CME program, which is for non-patients. It's the project that we started in a military base in the South. And since the responses are very good, we're now looking for 100 consumers, 100 civilian consumers to come on board, and what we're going to do is we pay for half the cost of the product for them, but they have to feed back on a monthly basis with how well they're doing or how well they're not doing so that we can fine-tune the product. To date, it was launched in May, and we're having just great responses on the product. Another benefit of the product is it's a liquid form in a specialty that's called liposomal or nanoliposomal. This is an area that I've been slowly moving from capsules to liquid form. So this product, Brain Care 2, replaces about 18 capsules in a teaspoon. So it becomes more convenient, and it also becomes less expensive, significantly less expensive. So we're trying to make it so that there's a product, there's an approach, an option for people who don't have, you know, the financing or the money to get into our regular program. And this one is probably where we're going to go and segue to. Because my goal is to get it to as many people as can be, as long as it's working consistently. And so far since May, short time it is, but it took 15 years to put this product together. And I'm comfortable and somewhat confident that it's going to be consistent. The only way to know for sure is to do this study. So anybody that's not already a patient can get on the Brain Care 2 CME program. And it explains everything on the website, what it is. And then we send out, you know, a handbook and information when they order the product. And that's it.
I was just looking. I'm a step behind you because I went to the provider list.
Right.
And I wondered, like Nebraska, for example, you've got a position open, and some of these, Nevada, you've got Dr. Anyway, folks, this is just a couple lines down, few lines down on the left side. You'll see it says, I don't want to go off this page. I'll come back to it. But what kind of doctors do you find are open? Is there, I mean, for example, people listening tonight, if they wanted to provide, say, this link and say, hey, listen to this on your way to or from work, and then it has the website listed, clearly, you know, they can go to the website and look at it. But if they're interested in listening, like I know, you know, one of my doctors actually listens to shows of mine that I recommend to him, and it's changed the course, some of the course of the way that he / and she are doing some things, some awakenings. And, you know, some doctors, we used to think of them as, well, at least a couple generations ago, maybe one generation ago, as gods, not to be challenged. They know it, you know, if they don't know it already, then it isn't there to be known. What I've found now is there may still be a lot of that ego out there, to be sure, but at the same time, there are physicians who are open. If you're bringing the research to them, you know, delivering the research to them, it may be something they weren't aware of before, or they just didn't have time to do all the research that Dr. Gordon's done. If you offer it, many times they'll listen and be open to it. But what type of practitioner, if you guys were to look, and it was 1, 2, 3 lines down, I was looking at TBI Network Physicians USA, so you can look there and scroll down, and it's got each state, and if there's somebody in your area, great. If there's not, and we wanted to try to get this in our area, is there a particular kind of practitioner that you would feel comfortable or have any advice on who to approach who might not be owned by big pharma and open and receptive to this kind of thing?
Traditional professional physicians in general are traditional. So they follow the dogma that is traditional. So who are the ones that seem to be, you know, we've got five new docs that we're going to be putting onto the list in the South, mostly in the South, South Carolina, North Carolina, Texas, Kentucky. So doctors that are already doing outside-the-box kind of medicine, like hormone replacement, HRT, or anti-aging medicine, or wellness medicine, or functional medicine, these are the doctors that are more prone to either understand what we're doing or willing to learn. So I'm going in November to Arizona to do a two-day lecture on the science. So it takes me about 16 hours to convey the information to physicians, and we've trained about 500 physicians so far, but not all of them have, you know, come to join us. You know, they want to do their own thing, which is, you know, the uniqueness of physician, becoming a physician, so you're independent. So we're looking for doctors that are primary care. We've got six naturopathic docs in Canada. One of my two daughters that works with me is a naturopathic from Bastyr University, doing phenomenally well. Took her about 18 months to get trained. We have an exam, classes, a book, DVD, video education, about 3 days of video education on top of everything else. Then they sit down and take an exam that takes about, it's taking an average of about 8 hours to take our exam. And if they pass with a 70%, then they're eligible to become certified. They have to present two cases to us. If they pass the two cases, then they're certified, and they can either participate with us or not. It's up to them. I mean, we're all independent. We're just working as a group trying to spread out there. And the reason why I'm working diligently, and Andrew and group also, to make this a reality is because we're working within the periphery of the government and within the government to get recognition for what we're doing. You know, the fact that I don't have, you know, a Harvard degree or a Yale degree or something like that puts me at a lesser of a quality individual, even though I've been able to develop or put together, because I really didn't develop anything. I used the brilliance of doctors before me, the researchers, and just applied it. That's all I did is applied their great science. And, you know, they think it should be medication. They think everybody with depression should be treated with antidepressants. We don't care what's causing depression. We just think you should be treated with antidepressants. Well, we look for the causation, and the causation is now being supported in reams of articles about inflammation. You just go to Google Scholar and you put in, you know, a search, inflammation and depression, inflammation and anxiety, inflammation and Alzheimer's. You'll see an incredible amount of articles that have already been published and continue to be published worldwide about the same thing.
You know, it's interesting how I have a couple ideas about people to talk to for Nebraska, but for example, just the difference in backgrounds. I was going to a pain clinic originally, this doctor, and they both had their backgrounds in anesthesiology, but one of them was at the University of Nebraska Med Center, and in fact, he started their pain clinic down there many years ago. It was in... he was there before I had my aneurysm in 95 and probably went to him in, I don't know, 97 down at Med Center. Well, they, you know, at the Med Center, they do a lot of great things, but they wouldn't let him do some things he knows how to do, and I'll tell you that in a second, without prescribing medication too. And so there was a time I was getting cranial sacral work and acupuncture and some things from him, and there was a point that, I don't know, either that wasn't working for me or I wasn't going to be paying for it anymore. I'm not sure. But a couple decades goes by, and I go to look him up again. He's in practice on his own now because he didn't like that protocol he had to follow down at the med center to do some of these out-of-the-box treatments. And he actually was trained to be a physician in the military. And because he was stationed in the East and around the world, he got familiar with some of these things like cranial sacral acupuncture, et cetera, et cetera. I went to a pain doctor before I found this guy again and found that he was on his own that was in my network where my internist is. And this guy also had a background in anesthesiologist, but his only course of action was pain block shot. That was it, pain block shot or drugs. And I looked at the difference between those two guys, both pain management doctors, and just what their backgrounds had opened them up to. Obviously, one is much more open to out-of-the-box thinking, and the other is strictly the protocol of wherever he went to school and what he was taught, I guess. So that's a factor, too, I think, in these physicians that you talk to.
It's personality. That's all it is personality. We've got two anesthesiologists, one in Huntsville, Alabama, and another one in Denver, Colorado. So doing very well.
Wow.
Both anesthesiologists, yeah.
Well, I'd love to. I'll have to talk to Dr. Chris about this and send him the link and see what he thinks. Now, going back for a minute, you said it kind of quick, and because it's a buzz right now, first you said you didn't think much of CBD oil. Then in your further studies, did you find that that is an element, the CBD oil that is derived from hemp that doesn't have the THC or that has the minute amount that still allows it to be legal? Did you find that that was or wasn't helpful then in inflammation? Because that's certainly... the buzz, right?
Literature research shows it's very beneficial. CBD oil helps, which is called the C1 receptor, which is pain. And then we're starting to see more articles about what they call endocannabinol receptors, which is another aspect to cannabinols, the CBD oils, and so forth. And they all modulate the pain cascade. The difference from person to person is how much do you need to reduce the inflammation. Everybody's unique. Now, in my population, the reason why
you can't use it.
Well, no, we can use it here in California. We can use it. You can use it in states that allow it because it has to have less than 0.01 or whatever the number is of delta-9 THC, the psychoactive component. Has to be almost nil, and therefore straight CBD. I have family members.
But if they're military, I'm sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you. I was going to say because that's the Fed hasn't come around to doing anything, and that's very confusing. The states that allow it, the states that don't. You know, my state makes money parking on the border of Colorado, you know, to bus people as they come over the border from Colorado. You know, we're going to be the last to have anything like that. But I know that for people, you know, my husband, for example, works for the government, and he just said nobody around there, he doesn't happen to have the issue, but you know, he works with active military, and, you know, a lot of them have pain conditions PTS, undoubtedly have had TBIs, whether they've been diagnosed or not, and that isn't an option that they can try because the Fed hasn't changed. So whether your state says it's okay or not, if they give you a routine drug test in the military, that minute amount is probably going to show up with continued use, right?
Yeah, well, it's a no-no in the active military. That's what I got from one of our admirals, that it's not advised. It's illegal for them to use it at this point. Even though there's a lot of study going on, either Bethesda, Maryland, or wherever it is, on CPD. And it works. I mean, I see it working. I don't prescribe it to my patients or suggest to the patient. They can walk into a store and buy it themselves. It's more expensive than some of the stuff I use. So if they want to add it on, if we're not getting the response that we'd like to see, and they add it on, they get better, wonderful.
Yeah.
Everybody's
yeah.
going to be unique in what they respond to. We're not all the same. We might look the same to
right.
some degree in that. We don't. But biochemically, we all are genetically different. And, you know, our body chemistry and what we take in and put out and so forth dictates, you know, how we're going to respond to different elements. So I don't put a rubber stamp anybody. We start with some basic things and we respond to their laboratory results as to what they're going to be put on, how they're feeling. We look at, you know, we have 23 pages of intake. So there's a lot of data that I go through on each patient to help to construct an optimal treatment protocol. And it's not always right on the first time. And that's why in our follow-up every month we see how they're doing so we can make waypoint changes in 30-day blocks instead of waiting months or whatever, you know, before we do anything. Our job is to get these guys back up on their feet, back into society, functioning optimally, being able to do things that they thought they'd never be able to do again. You just read the statement of the Air Force captain on my landing page at the website.
Mm-hmm.
And she's in Arizona. Just read what she said in 6 weeks. Her psychiatrist said, you don't need me anymore. And her speech therapist said, you don't need me anymore. Then I have a letter
right.
from a father of a veteran who was wheelchair dependent. He's now hiking up in the Rocky Mountains.
I saw
about
that.
Stopping the inflammation. It's about stopping the inflammation. It's about reducing inflammation. It's about helping the brain to heal itself.
Now, I just want to repeat for anybody, absolutely, I just want to repeat for anybody who came in a little late, because I'm seeing people who have come in a little late, but if you go to the website, tbimedlegal.com, that's tbimedlegal.com, you'll find Dr. Gordon's site, and The right under welcome, the USA patient enrollment request, if a person's not in your area, can you go back over that? Somebody in the chat room asked me, although he
sure.
says he's not far from your area, but is that something that
yeah.
anybody in the country can do or not?
Yeah, we have patients from 50 states. I'm licensed in the state of Florida and California. So if you don't need any prescribed medication, we can do what we're doing. If you need something prescribed, we have to enlist your primary physician to write the prescription. Now, because the majority of our treatment protocols are not prescribed medication, then the need is very rare. I've had patients who've flown into the office and became patients face-to-face, which meets the criteria by the California state and federal in prescribing things. And those are the options. That's why we're, you know, working diligently every day to try and find interested doctors in every state. We need 2 to 5 doctors per state in order to provide the services. Unfortunately, not all of the insurance companies cover it. We stopped with insurance back in 99. But we've had some patients in other doctor's offices go through their insurance, and unfortunately they get hit with large bills because a lot of the stuff we do is not accepted by the insurance company as being appropriate for a male. So we have to justify everything. And, you know,
right.
Ordering estradiol in a male, you know, they say, why are you ordering estradiol in a male? Well, you need to see how their estradiol is. Or if you're ordering, you know, pregnenolone or progesterone in a male, or testosterone in a female, DHT in a female, they want to know why you're doing that. So in 99, I was advised to, you know, get out of all insurance companies, and that's what I did. But we extend, you know, significant reductions in what the retail cost would be for our laboratory panels, about a third the price is what the patients pay. So
how can you get – that's the question I was going to ask. A mind reader. Go ahead.
No, I'll let you ask.
I was just going to ask you, how do you get our blood? How do we get our blood to you? Can we use a ParaMed service?
When the patient enrolls, we have 1,200, 1,500 draw centers throughout the United States. So a patient enrolls with us. We send a request for our proprietary laboratory testing to the laboratory in Florida, and they send to the patient a kit with all the stuff they need in it and the name of a location close to their home that they can walk into and get their blood drawn. If they want to have someone come to their house to have their blood drawn, it's $35. So they can have, from the comfort of their office or home, have a nurse come in and draw their blood. The nurse takes the blood to their center, processes it, and then mails it overnight to the laboratory in Florida. And then it takes anywhere between 4 to 7 days to get the results in our office. Then it takes about a week to get it processed into a report. And, you know, a lab that comes in today and I've got 15 other people that I'm doing from yesterday or last week. So it takes me, you know, a week or two to get the results to each patient. And we send them a digital report, 4 pages. With instructions to call the office and make arrangements for a one-hour consult. That's no additional charge for that. And during that hour, we go over each of the laboratory results as it pertains to their unique physical or psychological condition. And when we get finished, we go through the protocol, the treatment protocol that we're suggesting. The patient says yes or no. They can go to Amazon, get the stuff. They can have it sent to them from our office, wherever they want to get it. It's up to them. And then they get sent a 60-page handbook, which goes through our conversation with the supportive documentation, the report, the finalized report, and then a hard copy of the raw data from the laboratory results, the raw data from the lab included in the packet. So if they want to bring the lab results to their doctor to include it in their primary care's medical records, they can do that. A lot of times we get the patient coming back and says, you know, I showed it to my doctor, and he said, I don't know how to read this. They're all basic endocrinology markers.
I'm not really sure they would. You know, my internist, and of course it's not the same kind of blood work. Your regular physical is not doing this kind of blood work that we're talking about tonight on the show at all. But, you know, I found it interesting when I got my physical, you know, I used to like to go in, my doctor quit. I don't blame him. But, you know, now everybody looks like a pup to me when I go into the doctor's office. They're so young and squeaky. But, you know, I used to go in before and get the blood drawn, whatever they were doing with the other doctors, so that we'd have something to talk about else when I came, like get the results and talk about it, like what you were just saying. This doctor, the new one I got, in the same office, couple doctors split up this guy's patients, and I've only seen him once, but they have a portal, and they emailed my report, and at the top it said everything was normal. Well, okay, so I look at the thing, and, you know, they show a spread. First of all, I don't know what any of the tests are, okay, so there you go. And then normal is relative, like as I'm looking, even somebody who knows nothing sees that when the number is really close to the threshold, that that's an issue on the way to happening, or that maybe needs to be addressed, because one more point
Correct.
You would not be. Okay, so
right.
I got nothing. I got nothing out of that visit. I'm sure, you know, he got paid whatever they got paid. But, I mean, I actually got this thing emailed, so it's after the doctor's appointment. Says it's normal. I have no idea what the tests were and no idea what the implication of the numbers next to each.
Then you need to make arrangements to go to the doctor and say, I'd like to sit down with you and review my laboratory results. You do your research beforehand, and, you know, as you were saying, there was a couple of the results that were so close to the bottom, to the basement of the normal range. And, yes, that's relative low. And we have people that, you know, as that analogy that I gave at the beginning, between 10 and 90, and they came in at 12 and were told that they were normal, even though they had every single symptom that was equivalent to being less than that 10. And the doctor said that you're depressed or there's something else wrong with you, because they don't understand that optimally is in the middle. So if you have the range is 10 to 90, you add 10 and 90 divided by 2, it gives you the median, which is 50. So optimally
right.
you should be in the middle, not at the lowest. It's like two people
right.
sitting in front of me. One has $100 in their pocket. The other one has $1 million in the pocket. I can honestly say they both have money. The question is, which one do you want to be?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and your suggestion is a good one, but actually I was kind of offended. I'd like to do this. I don't care how long it takes. I've had that piece of paper that means nothing to me for months. Take a year getting to it if you want. You know, take till you come on the show next time and review my blood work, but I'll definitely...
Right, you want to send it to me? You can go ahead, send it to me.
I do. I'll fill in that form tomorrow morning.
No,
just send me
the laboratory results.
Oh, those? I'd like to have meaningful lab results, but sure, if I can find my way back
first
to the
portal. First send me the labs that were done, and we'll go from there.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Sounds good.
When did you have these labs done?
It would have been 6 months ago.
6 months ago, yeah.
Maybe.
One of the greatest fallacies in annual physicals, wellness exams, is you have to think of wellness as being 360 degrees around you, protective shield. And the amount of laboratory testing they do is maybe a couple of percentages of that 360 degrees. They might do, you know, 3 degrees, you know what I'm talking about? Not the whole 360
yeah.
around you. And based upon that sampling, they predict your whole quality of life. That's the fallacy. So what we do is we do more laboratory tests and that have more relevancy to brain function, to physical function, to immunity, sense of well-being, all these benefits that are written about in the literature. So we open up the percentage, the degrees of the arc around the circle. We increase it. And a lot of our laboratory results are interrelated. If this is high, it influences that over there. Or if this is low, it influences this over here. And it's these associations.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
yeah.
Dopamine is, yeah. So that's how the labs were set. It took 12 years to come up with this panel, this biomarker panel with 28 results on it. And some of the stuff is so incredible. University of Chicago, great research on thyroid functioning, why you need to have a reverse T3 done, why you need to have a T3 level done. You know, certain markers need to be done because it gives you a projective interpretation of how well you're doing. You don't know how you're doing if you don't know. If you don't see the analyses, if you don't see the tests, if you see one test and on that one test you're supposed to say whether or not you'll live for 100 years or not, that one test is statistically, you know, insignificant. But if you have 30 tests or 40 tests, you're increasing the amount of data points. The more data, the more reliable the outcome or the prediction of outcome. You have one day where the market's up and you don't follow anything else and you just use that one day. It was a Thursday, the third Thursday of a month on a hot day that the stock market did well. No, you need to have, you know, hundreds of days of data so that you can start predicting, you know, time-wise kind of temporal kind of fluctuations in things that happen around us. So, no, the minuscule amount of laboratory testing cannot be ample enough to help us in what we need to do, and that's predict well-being. How you feeling? I feel great. The next day, they're dead from a heart attack. How often I've seen that when I used to practice traditional medicine for 18 years. Never predicted. EKG normal.
Yeah.
Blood work normal. Blood pressure normal. They drop dead the next day.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's.
I've heard that too. I've heard that too. And as a matter of fact, I don't know that they would have even been able to know that. I didn't drop dead. I just almost dropped dead. But I had had a physical 2 weeks before my brain aneurysm ruptured.
Mm-hmm.
And then since I talked to you last, I fell, number one cause of TBI, I had to fall in that category, and snapped my neck really hard, a whiplash concussion.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I was reading or watching on one of your interviews today might have been Andrew talking, but one of the things you brought up, and this was true, some of the listeners have heard me say this before, but, you know, you don't, when I had my aneurysm, I knew nothing. I never even heard of an aneurysm. I wasn't a radio host. I didn't know anything about anything. So that was out of the blue. You know, years into being on here and knowing enough to be dangerous from great guests like you, I have this fall. I don't know whether I tripped on a threshold or what on my way out to the deck on a nice day with my hands full, but I was flying through the air suddenly, and all I could think of is, don't hit your head when you've had open brain surgery or, you know, real aware of that kind of thing. And I didn't. And I was glad I didn't, but I landed really hard, and I landed rocking back and then snapping forward. And I even knew about whiplash concussion. I knew you didn't have to be knocked out. I knew all these facts, but everything from that point on, you know, I said, great, nothing's broken. I didn't hit my head. Great. I picked up all the stuff that had gone flying around my deck and had my coffee and did whatever. And then I started having really bad headaches. And I didn't know, the point here is that when you have a brain injury, you're not always in your right mind. I had been having bad headaches for a couple months, actually, and I had just been like a robot going to the cabinet, having a couple Advil, going into my bedroom where it's dark, cool, taking out any kind of sensory interruption and breathing to help it work, you know, to help the Advil work and take that pain down. And it wasn't until my mom and my husband within like 2 days of each other said, boy, it seems like you're sure having a lot of headaches. And then, only then, with two prompters in close proximity, did I get the light bulb over my head and say, wow, there is a problem. You know, something did happen. And, you know, in the for what it's worth, whatever it's worth, I did go, and they said I had post-concussion syndrome. As near as I can tell, if you still have concussive symptoms after a couple of weeks, you get that diagnosis, I guess. And then it was kind of like after the aneurysm, going down the road a ways after that, you get a diagnosis. Okay, how do we fix it? Well, we don't fix it. You have post-concussion syndrome. Okay.
Yeah. Well, the way you fix it is you fix the inflammation that's precipitated by the event you experienced, that slip and fall. So it's a coup-counter-coup injury to the head, to the brain.
Yeah, exactly. Which didn't set very well, as a lot of us know and discuss on these programs, that repeated trauma to the brain is not a good thing. And then aging on top of it. I had a milestone birthday recently, and I'm noticing more trouble than before, you know, with some cognitive issues and memory issues and things like that, you know, typing and transposing letters and numbers and things I hadn't done for years, you know, doing that kind of stuff again. And there really hasn't been an answer in the doctor's office. So I've got to say, I haven't been knocking on the door a lot because, like a lot of us around this community, we go a lot in desperation at certain times, certain intervals, and then we get discouraged, and then we stop, you know, and then we just stop.
Yes.
And so that's why I really appreciate, because I've seen it, I've done it myself, and I hear about it all the time in this community, now going on 8 years, and it hasn't, that part hasn't changed, and it bums me out. I've been here almost 8 years, and that hasn't changed, and a lot of things that I hear haven't changed since 1995, you know, when I had intro to brain injury. Like some of the testing and that sort of thing, and the way that they handle, you know, the status quo protocol, if you will, hasn't seemed to change very much, or certainly not fast enough for most of us to not get discouraged.
Yep, I was called and invited to give a lecture to the oldest, in the oldest hospital in Los Angeles. And the doctor who called me, really nice, sent me, you know, what they'd like for me to lecture. I called up the doc and we chit-chatted, and she said to me, you know, we don't have any help for people with post-concussion or with concussion. They all go through a very negative experience. And I said, yeah, you know, you sent me what you wanted me to include in my lecture, and these are all antiquated approaches on traumatic brain injury, and that's the reason why you're not getting any benefit. So she said to me, So what do you suggest? I said, let me send you the last lecture I did for the Navy in Portsmouth. And so I sent it to her, and the next day or 2 days later, she sends me back three letters, W-O-W. Wow. Three exclamation points, and underneath it, she says, that's exactly what we need. She realized that, you know, if you, it's that statement that's, you know, assigned to Einstein, doing the same thing day after day, expecting different outcome. Well, that's what they were doing, the same thing that doesn't work. You know, you treat concussions with symptoms with antidepressants. No, you treat concussion with symptoms with the anti-inflammatories that are precipitated, you know, the inflammation that's precipitated by the trauma to the brain. That's how you get improvement. The beginning of this year, we were discovered, if you will, Andrew, Dr. Lewis, and myself by Dr. James Zender from Psychology Today. He's a psychologist in Minnesota who sees patients with post-traumatic stress syndrome disorder, what will it be, after CARS. And he started reading our information. In fact, he's coming to get trained in our, in Tucson in November. And he started writing blogs on what we're doing. And he had all these people, our patients, going to him and leaving him testimonials better than what they had told me, you know, in their monthly questionnaire, just incredible. And he calls me up, and Dr. Zender says, you know, in all my professional life, I've never seen such responses to anything. We have consistent responses, consistent results, positive results on our protocol after they get tested. And anyone could go to my website and read the Zender papers or go to Psychology Today and look up the blogs under Dr. James Zender and read 50, 60 testimonials. Just unbelievable. I mean, I didn't know about them until they told me they were coming to his site. But I think I sent it to you to read through them.
Yeah,
just
I did.
Impressive. Yeah, impressive, and our results are consistent. You know, Andrew just had a, I don't know if it's a contract or what, just developed a connection with one of the Navy SEALs foundations that started referring people to us, and they are being monitored very closely by the administration of the organization to make sure that they're getting responses. Our first case, you know, is 60% better in 3 months, you know, and now he's 80%, four or five months down the road, he's 70% better, 80% better, and another guy that was in a month, 80% better. I called him up and said, you can't be that much better in such a short time. He says, Doc, and he runs me through a list of all symptoms that disappeared from his migraines, his depression, his alcohol use, his sleep problems, his anger, explosive personality, anxiety, all that disappeared in a month, which is a little bit fast for us, but if it's consistent and he reports back to us consistently, we're great. And then we do our blood work to corroborate the benefits of his protocol. So we have initial blood work, and then three months later, we have a follow-up to corroborate as well as to modify his treatment if he needs to have a little more of X, Y, or Z. So it's a very tight protocol program, and our goal is to get these guys to a 10. That's our goal.
Yeah.
Not everybody achieves that goal, but, you know, if you don't aim high, you're going to fall short every time.
Exactly. Let's talk for a minute about diet, because say you get this blood work, you get on a different protocol. You don't want to shoot yourself in the foot by there's foods, our diet. A lot of our diet is very feeds that
right.
inflammation, if you will.
Correct.
And so it would be counterproductive to go through all these wellness steps and to try to get ourselves some of these symptoms alleviated, medications alleviated, and then sabotage it with diet. So we'd be remiss if we didn't mention something about diet.
Correct. My my middle daughter, who works with me, graduated undergraduate with honors in nutrition and food technology. She ended up writing a book with one of my endocrinologists on certain aspects of diet and inflammation. And so she's a great believer in the gut-brain connection. If you've got problems with the gut that they commonly call dysbiosis, which is an imbalance in the bacteria in the gut leading to inflammation. And that inflammation that's generated in the gut goes right to the brain. So eating low inflammatory diet, I'm not a great believer in a complete ketogenic diet, starvation for the brain, and we don't want to starve the brain. A modified ketogenic diet, laying off of alcohol, smoking, things that are damaging to the body. But more important, we need to replenish the things that are protective to the body, like the fish oils and the pregnenolone and so forth, and the quercetin and the vitamin E's and D's and so forth. And we use high dosing. We use therapeutic dosing. We don't put 1,000 milligrams of vitamin D. We use a hefty amount of vitamin D. And we've had patients who had depression, and within a few weeks their depression's gone. They had such a low level of vitamin D, their benefit of vitamin D in depression. You know, there's, 1.5 million articles on inflammation in the brain and vitamin D. It's that inflammation of the brain that creates the depression, that helps to foster depression. So nutrition, very important. Looking around the world, high fish intake, and mood disorders are less, higher alcohol and higher problems, higher smoking because of the damaged carbon monoxide and free radicals that are generated by some of the, smoking and things that we do to ourselves. So my daughter Allison integrates with patients on nutrition because it is a very important aspect. Exercise is a very important aspect as well. Meditation for calming and learning how to control based on meditation until you've had an improvement biochemically in the chemistry. And then it becomes a lot easier. Yoga, any of these are beneficial.
Yes. Yes. I heard once that if you shopped around the perimeter of the store, you're going to find more of the whole foods, that the more you work your way toward the middle of the store, the more processed foods there are going to be. So the stuff that's maybe not so good for you. Although...
Well, we go to Whole Foods, so... Whole Foods should have, across the board, good quality. There's a lot of non-dairy, gluten-free products that are available. But not all the gluten-free products are good. My daughter brought home this incredible cinema bun that's non-dairy and gluten-free, but the amount of cinnamon and sugar on it, unbelievable, but it tastes great. No gluten?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No gluten? I was going to say, I noticed that about
5,000 calories, no gluten.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I've noticed that at Whole Foods. They do a good job, but there are things like that come up. And I read somewhere that, not chips, potato chips, but like you see those, they veggie chips or whatever. That's the kind of thing that Whole Foods had. I've heard none of those, that a chip by any other name is still a chip, I guess.
They use extra virgin key lime oil, or they use, some kind of unique oil, as opposed to, vegetable oil or pig lard or something. So still you got to cook it. It's still you have to, boil the oil. So trans fatty acids can occur. And some of the oils we use, it occurs less. So That's right. Six of one, half dozen of another.
Yeah, I guess. I just, you gotta watch it. And I've been doing good with that. I've got a friend, that's another buzz going on with the CBD and the inflammatory right now is that keto diet. And I don't, the person I know doing it claims it's lifestyle because the first thing I said is I'm not going to do any diet. It's got to be like a lifestyle change thing because I don't, you know, I don't really want a Fitbit either and join a community like that.
Right.
I just want to get off my ass, you know?
Yeah.
I don't need to be a slave to my watch while it's giving me radiation in my arm telling me how many steps I've taken. You know, I just call me a rebel. I get it.
No.
I need to get up.
Yeah.
You know?
Get up and start moving.
Well, the other night I was, bicycle. I tried to ride a bike. You know, I don't know about that. It had been, 50 years since I had ridden a bike. When that old saying about, it's like riding a bike, you can get right back on. It was, I don't remember it. It probably was scary the very first time, but I got on a bike and it made me nervous. I don't know. You know, after you've had head trauma and obviously I was a great illustration of you can get it anyway. You know, you don't even have to be in the NFL or or a boxing
Correct.
Rink. You can trip on your back deck, you know, and do do damage.
2.1 million people a year do.
I know, and those are the ones
the
that are and those are the ones that are diagnosed. You know, I'd like to can't imagine how many are walking around and don't even
Correct.
Realize it. You know, they've had a change in their demeanor or they, you know, they weren't a drinker or didn't have a bad temper, and suddenly aspects of their character start changing, and it might not be right after the injury. That's what really muddies the water, and a lot of physicians in the traditional model don't seem to understand is, you know, I've had a number of people come on and talk about some incident they had where they banged their head, and you know, maybe it was 6 to 9 months later they started noticing some kind of issue and went in and the doctor said it couldn't be related to that fall or that whatever, you know, that car accident. It,
Understood.
You know, it would have shown up sooner than this. And I think
true. No, that's not true since they have science showing that up to 17 plus years after the initial insult, you can still find markers of inflammation in the brain. And as I said at the beginning of this discussion, everything is precipitated or caused by inflammation in the brain. Disruption of chemical pathways because of the inflammation that leads to all the personality mood changes. Sleep, cognition, memory, recall, the ability to learn new things, increased depression, suicide ideation, decreased libido, lack of aplomb, assertiveness, everything just goes straight down the tube. And it can go over long periods of time. And what happens, you know, 5, 7, 13 years down the road is the patient goes into the doctor's office and says, look, I've developed this depression or this mood changes. I'm angry all the time. And the doctor says, oh, you're depressed. Never once will they say, okay, have you ever had a head injury? Have you ever had an injury without loss of consciousness, any slip and fall, anything of that nature, a car accident, rear-ended, anything at any time throughout your life, roller skating accident, skateboarding, snowboarding, bicycle accident. And they never ask historical questions that could be the flag to say, wait a second, this person might have chronic, you know, be in the chronic phase of neuroinflammation. We said that at the beginning. Acute phase comes and goes, chronic phase stays. And the people who get the chronic phase, they don't have to have loss of consciousness. In fact, they found in 85% of the people who had loss of consciousness, head trauma with loss of consciousness, their CT scan and MRI scans were normal. Normal. So
yeah.
How good are CTs and MRIs? They're not. So I stopped doing all the neuroradiological studies, 5 years ago because they didn't help me. They really didn't help me. And they're expensive.
Right.
So what we're trying to do
is
a very practical approach to diagnosis and treatment of the neuroinflammation that begets the personality changes within 0 to 17 plus years. The only reason why I'm saying 17 plus is because all the research has been done up to 17 years. Well, next year is the 18th year, and the next one, 19th and 20th. And I think what they'll find is as they continue the investigation looking at these points, you'll see that it lasts in certain people long-term, and things that feed it are alcohol, drugs, poor nutrition, poor exercise. That maintains it because they've done nothing to help to improve the processes that are going on in the brain. Like the fish oil or the vitamin E or the quercetin or the whatever. So it just stays persistent.
Well, and I noticed that in the interview with Andrew, wasn't he on something like 14 medications?
Yeah, he was on 13,
but he
13
was also,
medications or so.
And he was also self-medicating with alcohol.
Alcohol.
Right?
Correct. Correct. Drinking a lot of
alcohol. So that's a lot of chemical interference. No wonder everything was going haywire.
It was pretty bad.
Amazing.
Yes.
It was pretty bad.
I have a couple of minutes left.
11 minutes left. So any
remarks? About 11 minutes. Say again?
I said any closing, any wind-up, anything you'd like to get in?
Let's see. Well, I think for those people who are listening that you have been following this entire process that I've been going through and that you've been going through, and you've seen the world of science expanding, starting to recognize that there's a lot more to TBI or PTS than we initially thought, but the medical community is still holding on to the vestiges of antiquated science or an antiquated position. Anybody listening can go and find the information that will support the new concepts or the concepts that we've talked about on this program, as well as refuting the benefits of antidepressants and antipsychotics in the majority of people. I leave my patients that come to me on their medication that's been prescribed by their doctor until the patient starts feeling better on what we're doing, and then have them go back and work out a deal with their doctor to start reducing the medication. But the only way that this is going to happen is if each and every person becomes a little bit more knowledgeable about what the science states. And on my website, I have some 100 articles under, references or testimonial area. I don't remember what area of my website, but there are 4 pages of articles and their abstracts, and you can get the full article and read it, as well as there's a couple of articles off to the right, bottom right of the webpage, articles out of Life Extension that were written. I didn't write them. Someone else wrote them after we interviewed, and they did their research, and they read an incredible amount of articles to substantiate things that I was saying or to support what they were writing about. So there's an incredible amount of information, and the best thing is that each and every one of us become a little bit more knowledgeable than the next, so that when we sit down with our doctor, we can politely present to them the fact that here is information that clearly states that it's inflammation, and that there is an answer. And if you go to the website and click on recent lectures that I've done, you can download the last lecture I did for this hospital, the oldest hospital in Los Angeles. And it's got a lot of information on the slides. There's maybe 50 or 60 slides, but a lot of information. Get educated.
Yeah, and we always talk about that you have to be your own best advocate because,
yep.
You know, we wish, you know, that there was a ringleader among the doctors, but unfortunately a lot of times TBI and PTS are diagnosed as each other. It's really not one thing, it's the other. Or it may be a combination of both, and yet it's at a time where we're, you know, a lot of times not in our right mind to be our own best advocate. But that's one of the reasons why I'm still here after so long, and bringing people like you on is to help us, to support us in where we can get that information so that we can present it to our medical practitioners and help them learn more about brain injury.
Right.
Because, again, with those kind of staggering numbers, and again, I know that there's, and then another substantial number of people that have not been diagnosed, that 2.1 million a year or whatever, those are the ones they can count. You know, and there's quite a few more that people that haven't been diagnosed but are living with the effects of these conditions. And so the more we can help educate our practitioners, I think the better, because that's going to help us. Educating them is going to help us. So I encourage you all to check out the website. Again, it's tbimedlegal.com. It's in the program notes, so if you've clicked on any of the places that I've posted today, you can find it at braininjuryradio.com. You can find it on myinaflash.org. A lot of you listeners know how to get a hold of me now, but they're on the links all over social media. That website is listed, tbimedlegal.com, and this has been Dr. Mark Gordon with us tonight. I want to thank you so much for coming back. It has been just incredible watching the evolution of your work over these years and seeing all of the progress. And, you know, and it doesn't matter what part is original and what is cumulative. You've really done your homework, and, you know, we couldn't sit there and read all those articles and communicate that to a physician. So thank you for doing what you've been doing. It's really groundbreaking work and not invasive. It doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt. It doesn't have horrible side effects.
No, that's the beauty of it. You know, I've been on my own treatment protocol for about 25 years, and I just I'll be turning 67, and I don't feel 67. I'm functioning mentally and physically at a much higher level, and that's because I've returned my biochemistry to a more healthier state than it was in the past, caused by the six or more traumas that I've had. Everybody could experience that. And I think if you start reading at the website, it'll start your process of self-healing by education first. All right.
Thank you so much.
And send me your labs.
I will do that. Thanks so much for being here. Enjoy the mountains. I hope it's cooler where you are than it is here.
It's a little warm, but it's nice. California. Take care.
Good. All right. Good night.
Good night.
Okay, everybody. That was Dr. Mark Gordon. And make sure to check out that website, tbimedlegal.com. www.thehumpnightshow.com. I want to thank you guys for listening tonight. I'll be back next Wednesday. And next Wednesday, I think we're going to be doing an open mic and topic to give you guys a chance to call in and talk about what's on your hearts and mind. I did that Independence Day and have done it a couple of days, and I want to make sure that you guys get the opportunity to call and talk about things that are on, like I said, your heart and mind. But again, I want to thank Dr. Gordon. I encourage you to check out his body of work. He's been at it a long time and phenomenal results. Check out it. In fact, it's all on his website. You can go to the media page, and there's several interviews on there to take a look at. The testimonials, all kinds of testimonials on there, and it's all, he's got a very user-friendly website. It's all listed clearly on the right side, and if you're interested in participating, that form is the second item down. Welcome, I think, is the first one, and that's the second item down, a little sheet you can fill out. I'm going to be doing that tomorrow, and I'll be patient because this has been a long road. But anyway, I'll see you all next week. I'm going to close tonight with something I said in the beginning of the show. We all need a little love, and out for Andrew, again, happy birthday to him tomorrow. This is Hannah Kerr. You can check her out at hannahkerr.com or like her. She's real likable at Hannah Kerr on Facebook. This is Warrior. Good night and God bless everybody. Thanks so much for being here. See you next week.